Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay in the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. And so I'd like to welcome everyone, and Misty's on a short, time out. And in her absence tonight, I'm really excited. I have one of our favorite guests that comes on our show from time to time, Maggie. She's joining me as my co-hostess. So, Maggie, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
And for those of you, as Maggie and I were saying, for those of you who miss the Southern accent, Maggie will take up right where Misty left off, right?
Absolutely. I'll say y'all a lot.
Just like Misty. So first, I'd like to welcome everybody who's listening from around the world. Thank you for all the wonderful comments and feedback that you give us. And this is a really tough time of the year for, straight wives who are going through the holidays. So I asked Maggie, who has a lot of training with marriage, separation and divorce. And Maggie, you run support groups for that, don't you?
Yeah, I work with a divorce support group.
Mm-hmm. So I said, who would know better than you than to come on and help our women to get through this time of year? Because it is a very difficult time for many women, whether it's their first year or whether or not, it's been a while, or I don't know if it, ever gets totally easier, but I guess in time, depending on the circumstances. But I think regardless that it is a very difficult time for women, and especially in the early, periods of time. So maybe you can mention a little bit about yourself, like in your early first year, was it difficult getting through the holiday season?
It was, and actually Christmas is kind of a double whammy for me because it's such a family-oriented holiday, and now my family's kind of been broken apart, although my children and I still do have a very good relationship. They're both grown and out on their own. But what makes it the double whammy is the fact that it was 3 days before Christmas that I first discovered my ex-husband was gay. So, I see this email between him and another man, and it's 3 days before Christmas. I don't have time to deal with this. So I kind of just shut everything down and shoved that thought to the back of everything and went on about dealing with Christmas. And it wasn't until probably 2 months later or a month and a half later that I really, began to dig into it again. So, Christmas is, is kind of rough simply because, I'm alone at Christmas now. But the 22nd of December marks that anniversary of the day that I found out the truth.
Maggie, for women who are just finding out, and you found out during a very difficult time of holiday season, there's never a good time, but there are some times that are harder than others. And I think, of course, the holidays are the hardest time of all.
Yeah.
And having to put that, on a back burner or just put it in the back of your mind, was that easy to do?
Oh,
or was
not
it always
at all
playing on your mind every moment?
It was there. I just made a deliberate effort to shove it to the back burner and to keep that back burner as low as possible, so that it didn't boil over. Because there were several things that happened during the Christmas holidays that, that kind of brought it to the forefront. For example, he went out one afternoon. It was one really nice afternoon, and he said, I'm just going to go out and go fishing. And when he came back and I went out into the garage for something, there was a condom packet lying beside his truck.
Uh-huh.
Now, why would there be a condom beside his truck? So that sort of brought it back to the forefront. We went on vacation in January, and he spent an awful lot of time with his laptop down in the rec room, which was where they had the Wi-Fi access. And that, kind of made me think, okay, what's cooking? So it was it was difficult, you know, not to think about it, but I knew that, you know, I had to wait until the right time to make a move and do anything. And that was about the first of February.
Would you advise women who are going through this that before you even confront your husband with information that you know, that you have to really prepare yourself as far as not only emotionally, but also, you know, speaking to an attorney, seeing what
absolutely.
Your rights are.
And it doesn't matter whether your spouse is gay or straight. The best thing that you can do before you ever confront your spouse with anything is to have a good plan of action, and that one, the first thing is to go see a good attorney and find out what your rights are. And if you can possibly see the best attorney in town, that's even better, because then you have conflicted your spouse out of using that attorney. They're going to have to use somebody that's not quite as good.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, find out what your rights are and come up with a plan of action, because, when I went to see an attorney, it was dumb luck that I did it this way. I asked a friend who she had used for her divorce because she had raved about how good this attorney was, and so I called and I made an appointment. And once I went in and I laid out everything that I knew, which by that point in time I had been investigating for a month, and I had a lot of evidence, you know, very black and white evidence that he was gay and had been having affairs for years. And they told me, you know, do not confront him until we are ready to make a move legally. You know, don't let him bait you. Don't let him drag you into arguments, because you're liable to say something that he can use against you. And that was very difficult, too. But I knew that I had to do it in order to have a good outcome for myself.
Mm-hmm. Now, before, you know, before we talk about, you know, other things, I just want to talk a little more about you. When you first discovered this information, were you totally shocked?
Absolutely stunned. I mean, it was a real gut punch. I had no clue. We had been married for almost 36 years at the time. And, I mean, and I still try to look back and see if I could see red flags.
Mm-hmm.
And there just wasn't anything. I mean, when he told me he had to work late, I believed that he had to work late. You know, I gave him no reason to distrust me, and I presumed that the trust went both ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, totally shocked.
Because I think some women feel that this is just so impossible. How could this possibly happen? There's no signs. You know, we have this expectation in our minds of what gay represents. And, oh, well, my husband's not like that. I've never caught him with anybody. Even, you know, he's not looking at gay porno. I mean, you can come up with a million reasons why he's not gay.
I mean, mine
had
a motorcycle and a tattoo and was very athletic and, you know, not, you know, he wasn't a stereotypical, you know, effeminate gay man, you know,
I think so many of us get the wrong impression, because that's who we see representing gay, people like Liberace and people who are feminine.
Right.
And we grow up with that kind of vision of gay. Right?
It's not always that way, you know.
And especially nowadays, you know, where people don't have to play roles. And I think also a lot of these men who get married, they're playing the role of a straight husband. So they for sure are not going to be the guys who you're going to see on television who are openly gay.
Right, because they
are guys who are experts at pretending.
Right, they play a role. They're trying to be socially acceptable, and
mm-hmm.
I think marrying a straight woman is one of those things that, you know, they do that to make themselves socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm. So after your marriage, you know, it was over. Let's talk about what you remember about your first holiday season.
It was lonely. I had moved out of my house about the middle of October, and I had moved into an apartment which was fairly sparsely furnished because I didn't take very much at all from the house. I was more concerned with money than I was with stuff. Gee, I'm trying to remember. That was 3 years ago. You think I could remember everything about
no,
it, but time has faded a lot of those memories. But I do remember that it was lonely.
Mm-hmm.
One of my children is married, so I went to visit them because they have a child. And so they had said, you know, once we have a child, you know, we're staying home for Christmas so that Santa Claus could come. So, you know, I was able to go visit with them, and that was a nice diversion. And also a couple of weeks before Christmas, some girlfriends that I had met in the divorce support group that I was attending, we got together for a weekend, and actually we just got together again last weekend, and we were talking about how different our lives were and how different we were than we were 3 years ago. At that point, we were all still in the middle of divorce. You know, none of us had a final, you know, divorce decree yet. We were, you know, still trying to get everything all worked out, and now all of us are divorced. We're all moving on with our lives. Two of us didn't work during our marriages, and now we have part-time jobs. And we just all agreed that we're in a much better place. We're happier. You know, I mean, it takes work to get to that, but you know, you can get there.
Right, and it's not a quick fix, because I always say that it's a process.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
a process,
not.
And you can move two steps ahead one day, and then you're back two steps in the beginning.
Right,
and then you're another step
I like
ahead.
To say it's kind of like a roller coaster, and you go up a steep hill, and then you drop down, and then it'll kind of level off for a while. And then the next thing you know, there's a sharp turn, and a lot of times you don't see it coming. But, you know, eventually that roller coaster pulls into the station and it stops. So
you can look back now, and it's been a few years, and you feel now that holidays are coming, those feelings are gone.
No.
I mean, not all of them, but, you know, you're not
yeah,
doing that.
Yeah, I mean, oh, yeah, it's not nearly as bad. And a lot of that is because of some really good information that my therapist gave me about dealing with the holidays. And I can boil it all down to one word, and that is planning. If you will plan ahead, there's a lot that you can do to kind of forestall some of the things that can hit you out of the blue over the holidays. And one of the other things is that you have to create a new normal. That was the term that she used. So she said, you're going to have to create a new normal because the old normal isn't there anymore. And if you try to hang on to that old normal, it's just going to cause you to stay in pain. And to be unhappy. So create a new normal. And she gave me some things that, you know, I could do to create that new normal.
Okay. Well, can you talk about some of them for our listeners?
Sure. I've got notes here so that I don't forget anything. One of the first things she told me was to look at how things used to be, and then decide what I wanted to keep and what I wanted to give up and what I wanted to change.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how to go about creating that new normal. And to plan ahead, you know, don't wait until New Year's Eve to decide, you know, you're going to do something different for Christmas. You know, you've got to start thinking about this. You know, probably ought to start before Thanksgiving, because that's really when the whole Christmas season starts, although around here they begin decorating in July. But, so plan well enough ahead, you know, that they don't sneak up, that the holidays don't sneak up and attack you. And, it's not just Thanksgiving and Christmas. I found that Memorial Day, you know, people go on vacation and go to the beach, you know, and so all your friends and your family, you know, they're all out of town. You know, so what do you do for Memorial Day, the 4th of July, Labor Day, you know, that sort of thing, you know. You'll be amazed, you know, and then, of course, we just won't even go to Valentine's Day. That's probably the worst one of all. You know, the best thing you can do is just send yourself flowers and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
Although
I do tell people that, you know, when it comes to Valentine's Day, you know, when I first was going through all this, I kind of redefined Valentine's Day. It's always going to be a day of love, but I really focused it on my children, on my family, my mother, my, you know, my siblings.
Right, and yourself, too. Focus it on yourself. You know,
yeah.
Love yourself, because if you can't love yourself, you know, how can you love other people?
Exactly.
Yeah. But some of the other things that she talked to me about were, you know, buddy up with friends or family. You know, if you've got some friends, you know, maybe some other divorced women. I was very fortunate. I went through this divorce support group in the month before Christmas, and I made some really good friends. And
mm-hmm.
we got together, and we would go out to dinner, and we would go to movies, or we would just meet for coffee. You know, if you have, you know, family close, you know, which I don't. My closest family is 2 hours away. That's one of my children. My mother lives 500 miles away, so it's not easy to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you can buddy up with some friends or family so that you're not completely by yourself, that can sort of forestall some of that loneliness. Start some new traditions. You know, if you always cooked a big dinner on Thanksgiving and had all this stuff, you know, decide that, hey, I'm going to have pizza for Thanksgiving now, you know, if you don't have family coming in, you know. Or find something new in your town to do. Look through the newspaper. The newspaper always lists local activities that you can do, different musical programs or plays or we have a beautiful botanical garden here, and they decorate it with lights at Christmas, and you can drive through it and turn your radio station and pick up the music that they broadcast. And that's a great thing to do, get a car full of friends and go do something like that, or just drive through neighborhoods and look at the Christmas lights.
Mm-hmm.
Another good thing she told me was, she said, you know, help somebody else who might be alone. Reaching out to another person, you know, takes your mind off yourself. And at my church, we've been studying different things about Advent. And one of the things we did was Secret Santa. We were supposed to find somebody that we could play Secret Santa to. The whole idea of anonymous giving and anonymous helping, you know. So I found there was a lady in my church who had major surgery about 2 or 3 weeks ago. They thought she had abdominal cancer. Fortunately, she didn't. But
mm-hmm.
she's having a very long, slow, tough recovery. And I put together a little basket of stuff for her. And doing that, you know, it made me feel good. It was fun to do it. I did it at the dollar store, so it wasn't expensive. And, you know, knowing that I've helped her, you know, kind of gave me a warm fuzzy on the inside. And there's nothing wrong with doing things that make you feel good, you know.
Exactly. And I think that's so important on that, on any of those particular days, that as difficult as it is, because you're changing something that's become a pattern or a habit. Even, I mean, some marriages are good, some marriages were just there, but regardless, you know, you're now on your own. And it's a very hard adjustment, and especially if you have younger children. I mean, did they discuss that with you? Discuss that in your divorce group? Some children have to first go to one set of parents and the other
right.
parent.
Yeah, the one thing that you know the divorce group talked about, and also, you know, with in my case, you know, my children were grown, so it wasn't, you know, an issue of, you know, court mandated child visitation and everything. But, you know, we do have, you know, to figure out, you know, when they're going to dad's, you know, when they're going to do what. And then my daughter-in-law's parents are divorced as well. So now my son and daughter-in-law have 4 places to go
mm-hmm.
every holiday. So that makes it rough. But the thing you have to remember is that your children did not divorce anybody.
That's so true.
Yeah. Don't drag your kids into the middle of it, you know. Try to keep things as calm and you know, and some patterns, as far as they're concerned, are going to have to stay the same, because you don't want to completely disrupt their life. But, you know, they didn't divorce anybody. Their father's still their father, you're still their mother, and, you know, there may be some times when you're just going to have to suck it up and move on. I mean, I found out that my son visited his father for Thanksgiving and didn't tell me. So he was 6 miles away, and I didn't know it. But, you know, I can't control their lives, and he's still their father. So, you know, it was a little hurtful. It hurt.
It is
absolutely
hurtful.
It hurt.
Absolutely.
But, you know.
And I remember how I used to feel hurt, too, if my kids would say, well, I'm going with Dad for this or for that. And I would say, well, sure, I do all the hard work. I'm the one who was here raising you. I'm the one taking care of you, and you're going to his house for, you know, the holidays. And I think that's a very normal way to feel, you know, especially in the beginning, when you're still healing yourself. Because I think what women don't realize is that, you know, your husbands have dealt with this issue their whole lives. And by the time you find out, you know, it hits you smack in the face, and they expect you to just, okay, here's the news, learn to, you know, grieve over it, and let's move on and move to another place. You know, they're ready to move ahead. Because they've been waiting all these years to move ahead, but, you know, you're just finding this out.
My ex-husband actually thought that we could still have family holidays together, you know, that we could roast the turkey and do the stuffing and the mashed potatoes and have Thanksgiving dinner together. And I'm thinking, no, I don't think that's going to work, especially, you know, after his boyfriend moved in. I just don't think that's, you know, that's going to happen. And it hasn't, you know. But I was looking at my list here to see what else she told me. She said, go buy yourself something special. Be kind to you. And I know that, you know, that after a divorce, especially if a woman has not worked outside the home, which I had not. I was a stay-at-home mom. You know, money can be very tight. So, you know, that something special may just be a trip to the dollar store for some, you know, bath salts and some lotion that smells very nice. Or last Christmas, I treated myself to a vacation in the mountains and 3 nights in a bed and breakfast. But I had gone to work last year, and I had a salary coming in, and I was very frugal, and I put money aside and saved for it, and I had a wonderful time. I had a wonderful, wonderful time.
And I think it's so important to treat yourself to something you want to do. And especially during the holidays, going someplace that's different, that's not a constant reminder of what you don't have in your own home, being with other friends or with other people in a group. You know, I'm just curious, how did you find your divorce group? Maybe you could tell people.
My therapist was actually the one who told me about it.
I mean, does it run through a hospital or through?
It is a faith-based group, but it's non-denominational. I mean, it's open to everyone. It was begun through the Catholic Church, but it's open to everyone. And there's no, you know, specific, really, there's no, you know, religious doctrine that's, you know, that's preached, although, you know, God is talked about.
I think that's interesting that it was started through the Catholic Church that doesn't believe in divorce.
And it doesn't believe in divorce, yeah, amazing, yeah, weird. But yeah. But it's, I mean, the program is called Beginning Experience. I'll put in a plug for that. You know, you can Google beginningexperience.org and see if there's a group in your area. There's another big group that has a number of, they have a number of places that hold this group. It's called Divorce Care. And I think that's divorcecare.com or divorcecare.org. You can look that up. And even in the 3 years since I, you know, moved out of my house, I've seen more and more divorce support groups pop up in town. The fastest growing group of divorcees is the over 60 crowd, surprisingly enough. So I think, you know, they're realizing there's more and more of a need for something to help people cope with all the different, you know, feelings and emotions that you go through, you know, when you're going through a divorce, you know, regardless of your spouse's, you know, sexuality. You know, the gay thing just adds a whole other layer of awfulness to it.
Right, it's a whole new dimension, but it's still a lot of the same issues that come up as breakups. get divorced,
right?
Right,
you know, and the group that I work with is based around the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross grief model. You know, that you go through five stages of grieving: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And I can say that I went through every one of those, you know, because my first reaction to that first email I saw was, oh, no, this can't be true. This is probably him and some guy from the gym trash talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the more I dug, the more I realized, no, it was true. And I can remember, you know, I mean, I'm still pretty angry. that's the one I cycle back and forth through. Bargaining. I can remember sitting at a stoplight in my car and thinking, God, if you will let me test negative for HIV, herpes, and hepatitis, you can let me have syphilis because I can cure that. And that's a heck of a thing for anybody to have to bargain about. You shouldn't have to bargain for something like that.
Oh, goodness. Unfortunately, that's what we do.
Yeah.
I'm laughing, but, you know, it's the same way.
Yeah.
Wasn't laughing when I was bargaining, but it's so true.
No. I wasn't laughing during that week when I waited for the blood test results to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, they were all negative.
But we do advise that to all women, right?
Yeah.
We tell all women, make sure you check yourself, regardless of whether you have relationships.
Make sure you go to a doctor. Absolutely.
Yeah, some women say, well, we haven't had sex for a couple of years. I say check yourself anyway because, you know, people are thinking, well, HIV only has so long to, you know, go through. But what about all the other sexually transmitted diseases?
Mm-hmm.
You can sit for years on them and not know, right?
Right.
So I think that's really important to, you know, as soon as you find out and you take hold of your, you know, of what's going on here, you have to have a test. And today it's very common. It's not as traumatizing as back in the days when I had it, you know, originally many years ago. But today, you know, it's kind of commonplace, so you don't have to feel embarrassed to ask for it. Did you feel embarrassed when you went?
You know. Oh, yeah, I was completely mortified. I was totally humiliated to have to call, you know, this family doctor that I have used since, you know, the late 80s and say, you know, well, I told the receptionist, I said, I need whatever tests you have to have when you find out your husband has been unfaithful. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I wasn't even sure what all they had to test for. You know, I just said, you know, let's do it all, you know. And so they did. And then the little nurse that was in the room, you know, when the doctor was in there with me, after the doctor left, she just sort of reached over and she patted me on the arm and she said, if it makes you feel any better, I've been through this too, and I know how humiliating it is, you know, to think that, you know, someone that you love would do this. And she said, but it'll get better. And I thought that was very kind of her to do that.
That's
a lot of what your support group is, and the chats that we have is, you know, reaching out through cyberspace to pat somebody on the back and say, you know, I understand. I know how you feel. I
mm-hmm.
felt that way too, but you know, it'll get better.
I'm glad to hear that because I always say that support is so important, and
yes.
Especially during the holiday times. I mean, especially when it's your early holiday times. That's why I like to make sure that, you know, I'm there constantly on Christmas night, Christmas Eve, because this is such a difficult time, like I say, for people who are going through their early first year alone. And especially if you have younger children and you have agreements to share them. You know, it's hard enough just, you know, coping with this whole fact on your own and then not having your child around to enjoy on a holiday. And some of our parents don't have that.
Right.
So what were some of the other tips that she gave you?
Well, one other thing was she said, you know, if it's possible or if it's something that, you know, that you feel comfortable doing, but to spend Christmas Day maybe helping out at a nursing home or a homeless shelter. You know, again, it's that reaching out to somebody else, you know, that can help you take your mind off of your problems. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
helping someone else, you know, it helps you. There's the whole compassion thing, you know. This, you know, when you understand, you know, compassion and you can offer compassion to someone else, then I'm a great believer in, you know, in karma. You know, it all comes back around, the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the good will come back to you.
One of the things that you sent me, which I thought was really important, I think it was the most important point that you sent me of all of them, and it said, before you make decisions whether to go to family celebrations, write the pros and cons of why you should or should not go. Will you make others feel uncomfortable? Will you be uncomfortable? Will you eat too much? Will they really miss you? Whom will you really miss? Then decide. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. It's a situation of it kind of goes back to being kind to yourself and thinking about yourself, and that's not selfish to do that. That's healthy to do that. You know, if going to, you know, some sort of family celebration that you've always done, you know, is going to make you feel bad, you know, just don't do it. Don't deliberately put yourself into positions that make you feel bad. And if somebody else doesn't like it, then tough.
And I think that's so true because, you know, I've done that now with Thanksgiving for the last six, seven years. You know, unfortunately, I lost both my children, you know, in this past decade. And Thanksgiving was my most wonderful time with the kids. You know, that was their favorite holiday. And since, you know, I lost my second child, my son, you know, 7 years ago, it just never would mean the same thing to me. You know, it just was such a, you know, painful time because that was like his last week and his last supper, and Thanksgiving was always his best meal. In the beginning, I thought, okay, well, the first year, people will understand. By the second year, you know, they weren't understanding as much. But I just needed that time to be by myself. I didn't feel comfortable going to a family gathering. And I also thought, you know, am I going to make you uncomfortable because I'm going to cry? You know, it's an upsetting time for me. You know, am I going to be uncomfortable because I'll see all the other kids laughing and having fun and remembering? And now it's like I say, this is my sixth year, I guess, since, you know, the last, you know, the death of my son. And even this year I said to my sisters, I'm really sorry. I just can't feel right, you know, at this particular time. And I don't feel like I have to, you know, make excuses anymore. It's just a painful thing, even now. So I think
you can say
it's too hard, right?
Yeah. And one of the things that I found, too, is in the beginning of the whole divorce process, just the fact that you're getting a divorce makes other people uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've lost some friends, you know, that just sort of faded into the background for whatever reason. You know, I don't know whether, you know, they felt like they had to take sides and they're still friends with my ex-husband and so they felt like they couldn't still be friends with me. Or whether, you know, maybe they thought divorce was contagious and that if they were around me, they would end up divorced too. Or, you know, I don't know, whatever reason. But, you know, but yeah, the divorce makes other people feel uncomfortable. So, you know, don't be too surprised if you lose some friends over it. And you know, you probably are going to lose your husband's family. I know my ex-husband's family has absolutely nothing to do with me.
And that's really difficult too, Maggie. And can we just talk about that for a minute? Because, you know, holidays aside, just that whole, you know, part of divorce where I see this happening so many times where you're really close with your husband's family and now it's almost like, you know, they have to take a side and it's not going to be yours because blood is going to be thicker than water regardless of what you think.
Right. And he's told them something that's totally not true, and I can't refute it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so they think I'm the bad guy.
But even when they know you're the right guy, you know, it still comes down many times where families
mm-hmm.
will still stick by their kids. You know, they're going to stick by their sons.
Yeah. And the one situation that I know of where that didn't happen, I have a good friend whose husband cheated on her during their entire marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And she is still very close friends with his sister. And they go on trips together, and they do a big family Thanksgiving together. because his whole family has basically disowned him because they can't believe that he treated his wife so shabbily. And I, that's the exception rather than the rule. But you know, I was amazed when she told me, you know, she was going to, you know, to her ex-husband's sister's house for Thanksgiving, you know, and I said, your sister-in-law? And she said, yeah. She said, and my ex-husband's not invited. They told him he wasn't welcome there.
Yeah, and I think, like you say, that's more the exception.
That's the exception, yeah. But yeah,
usually
you know,
the other way, and even when they know the husband's gay, I think a lot of times that, you know, families think that you had something to do with it, or, you know, they weren't gay when they married you, so why are they gay now? Or even if they suspected, well, you couldn't fix that problem, like, you know, we're the miracle workers who can change their sexuality.
Right, just
so,
like we could change the color of their eyes or whatever.
Exactly. So a lot of times I think families, even, you know, when they know the real reason, you know, they still back off and they still, you know, once again, split with the husband and that's it. And I've seen a lot of women who are really hurt over that because they thought they had really close, loving relationships, you know, with their in-laws, and all of a sudden they don't. So not only have they lost the marriage, not only have they lost the husband, but now they've also lost the family that they thought, you know, they were so close to.
Right.
Do you see that happening in straight divorces?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Usually, you know, the family ends up, you know, they take sides. They take sides, and so, you know, most people, I guess probably the ones who have small children may, you know, see more of the interaction because, you know, there's the hope that, you know, the grandparents are still going to be there for their small children, that the husband's, you know, parents are still going to be there, but yeah, you know, I see, you know, wives with straight husbands, you know, their in-laws are pretty much, you know, out of the picture now, too.
Yeah, it's really hard all the way around. I mean, what happens in situations? What's the best way to handle it when you have younger children, do you think, with the holidays?
To be honest, I don't know because I haven't had to deal with that.
A lot of it is
mandated by the court. You know, the visitation schedule is going to be mandated by the court. So, you know, you've got to follow that or, you know, be in contempt. Again, you know, I think, you know, don't drag your kids into the middle of it. They didn't divorce, you know, they didn't divorce anybody. I guess my advice would be, you know, just do what you have to do.
One of the things that, you know, you have in the material that, you know, you're sharing with our listeners and also with me, which I think is such an important point when it comes to the kids. And it says, separate out your feelings from your kids' feelings. It's okay if you don't exactly feel like dancing. Nevertheless, you can still make the holidays a wonderful time for them. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I would say, you know, try to maintain as much, you know, normalcy as for them as they've had in the past. You know, if you've always opened your Christmas presents on Christmas Eve, then keep doing that, you know, for your kids, you know. You know, make sure you hang up the stockings and all the things that you know that you've done. You know, try to keep life just as level as you can. You know, for the kids I know something that I do see happen a lot of times, and it happens more with the husbands than it does with the wives. It's what we call the Disney Daddy syndrome. Daddy, you know, has misbehaved and cause the family to break up, but he tries to buy the kids affection with expensive gifts or trips to Disneyland or something like that, and mom can't do that because, you know, mom's stayed at home all these years and she's struggling now to get by, and it's real easy to fall into a trap of you know, bad-mouthing your ex-husband and, you know, don't do it because it'll backfire on you. Just do what you can. You know, ultimately it will pay off, you know, because eventually they'll understand that love is a lot more important than, you know, an iPhone or whatever. I'm just grasping for something here, you know. You know, when they're adults, they'll appreciate, you know,
But it's so true because so many of our women, you know, are certainly not in the same financial shape as their husbands are in, and they can't afford to buy the luxury items that, you know, a lot of the men buy. And I remember when my kids were little, you know, and it used to be the holidays, and my ex would buy them these big extravagant gifts. And, of course, you know, he became superhero daddy to them because, you know, they got a new bedroom set, a new television. And, you know, I was really struggling to make ends meet, and I couldn't afford these kinds of luxury gifts. So, you know, you feel like you're on the defensive right away to start with. And, you know, it is a difficult thing when you're a single parent, you know, raising children, primary responsibility, you know, of raising the children, because, you know, many times there's not split custody, or even if it's split, you're not splitting the time necessarily. We had shared custody, but, you know, I had primary responsibility for raising the kids when they were little. And, you know, it was really a hardship in itself, you know, to try to make all the ends meet. So you're really struggling, and here comes good old daddy bringing, you know, the gifts of the year. And how do you compete with that?
Yeah.
And I don't think you can, or just you have to, right?
Yeah, you can't. You can't. Like I say, you do what you can do. And you show them all the love and the support that you can, you know. And if they're older, you can sit down and maybe talk to them about, you know, the reality of finances,
try to do,
you know.
I knew I couldn't compete, you know, financially. That certainly, I knew that was not even, I didn't have a chance there. But what I could compete with is that, you know, I had them a lot of the time. Most of the time. So we could do fun things that they wouldn't necessarily be doing with their father. So when it came to the holidays, you know, we're Jewish, but, you know, we would just make all kinds of decorations and decorate the house. And even if it was stuff made out of, you know, colored paper and making those ribbons or popcorn stuff and whatever it was, you know, we try to make it fun and, you know, arts and crafts kinds of things. So they would feel
and
proud
a lot
of what they did.
And a lot of communities have a lot of activities that don't cost anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a park in the middle of our town that they've, what do they call it? They call it the Tinsel Trail. And
mm-hmm.
they put up two rows of Christmas trees, and then different organizations in town pay money. They buy that tree, quote unquote, buy that tree, and they decorate it. And
mm-hmm.
it costs you nothing to go down there and walk down those rows of Christmas trees and look at all the different ways they've been decorated.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of things. You know, most of the time those things are listed in your local newspaper.
Yeah,
and
it's true. I mean, I used to take my kids riding around the car, and we used to go look at all the decorations.
Yeah, look at all
the lights.
The lights and, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, we really
try
to do the activities.
Yeah, time is such an important thing to give your children, you know, spending time with them.
I think that's what they really remember in life. You know, they're not going to remember necessarily,
right.
you know, the bedroom set or the iPhone.
Right.
But they will remember.
And the public library is a tremendous resource for you. You know, it doesn't cost anything to get a library card. And most libraries now have movies that you can check out, DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so you can have movie night and popcorn, and it doesn't cost, you know, the movie's not going to cost you anything. Popcorn is fairly inexpensive if you make your own popcorn. So you can
mm-hmm.
have movie night, and you can turn off the lights and make it dark just like the movie theater and have a great time with your kids. And, but, yeah, the time that you spend with them is ultimately the biggest and the best gift that you can give them.
Well, I think that's so true. And one of the things also that, you know, you have some wonderful information here, and, you know, it says don't set yourself up for disappointment. And I think that that's such an important point, you know, to have big expectations. Well, you did it related to, like, if you're expecting a phone call from family or friends, you'll probably be disappointed, especially on Christmas Day. Plan to do your special calling on another day and write ahead so that the special people can be near the phone when you call. You know, people do have a lot of plans on that particular day. And if you're counting on them being there waiting for your call, that may not be happening.
Right. I used to work in customer service years ago, and we had a phrase that we used called under-promise and over-deliver. you know, promise them less than you think you can give them. But then, you know, if you can do more than that, then they're going to be pleasantly surprised. And I think it's almost kind of like the reverse here, kind of under expect, you know, set your expectations maybe a little lower, and then you might be, you know, pleasantly surprised, you know, by what happens. But yeah, don't over expect. Don't set yourself up for disappointment, you know. Again, planning, you know, try to plan ahead and you know, try to plan as much as possible. And of course, you know, things happen and plans get derailed. But, you know, if you've tried, then you at least have the satisfaction of knowing, you know, I made an effort to try to make this, you know, a better holiday for me and a less lonely holiday. And another thing I know that they taught us in divorce group is that there's a difference between being alone and being lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that, you know, I don't mind being alone. I rather enjoy the quiet. I can watch whatever I want to on television. I don't have to fight for anybody with the remote, you know, fight for the remote with anybody. I can watch all the silly television programs I want. I can rent all the chick flicks I want to watch, and I don't have to listen to anybody complain about them. So there's, you know, there are some advantages, you know, especially if you've
there's
been
definitely
in a bad
pluses,
situation.
And, you know, so many of our women were really in very unhappy marriages throughout
right.
the year. And
yeah.
I'm not saying they were all terrible marriages, but, you know, some of those years were not good years.
Right.
And
there's
especially
there's
as
probably
the
some
marriage
degree of
on.
Unhappiness, yeah.
Right, so I mean,
and
you
so
can
being,
learn
you know,
to,
being in a place where you know where you're not having to put up with negative comments or you know, dirty socks in the corner or
mm-hmm.
whatever, you know, is you know,
you have control
that,
over your own life.
Nice.
You're not walking on eggshells anymore.
Absolutely.
You don't have to, you know, worry if you make a mistake if he's going to start yelling about it. You know, now you can have your life back and.
Fine. And you can make it whatever you want it to be. You know?
Yeah, and there's such a plus to that. And, you know, so many women, I think, just miss out on that because they feel, well, I'm never going to make it on my own. Or, you know, I've been married for 30 years or 25 years. Well, you were married a long time, right?
I had been married almost 37 years by the time my divorce was final. And
mm-hmm.
that was, I mean, you know, telling my husband that I wanted a divorce was probably the scariest thing I had ever done in my life. And for a long time I kept saying no, you know, I'm not going to ask for a divorce, you know. And then I, you know, I had two really good friends that I had confided in and told them what was going on, and they both said, you know, you can't stay in that marriage. And I
mm-hmm.
finally began to listen to them and realize no, I couldn't, because he wasn't going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was better for both of us, you know.
Right,
we were
it's
out
an unhealthy state to be in when you have somebody who, you know, who's not who you thought they were, who's living a different life outside the life that you thought you were living.
Right.
I mean, you can try to put it together all you want, but in the long run, I mean, how much can you keep overlooking? You know,
yeah.
You can blind yourself to it, but eventually you're going to have to deal with it.
Right.
And I just think it's a very hard thing to deal with under the best of circumstances. So during the holidays, it's a really rough time. I really give you so much credit that after you found out that you were able to not say anything, you know, because some people just can't hold that in.
Right.
And it's not to their advantage. I tell them, you know, you have
yeah.
to be the same kind of actor that he's been all this time.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
otherwise you're going to end up losing more than you end up gaining. There's
right.
no sense confronting him unless you're ready to really have all the information available, have spoken with your attorneys, see what
right.
rights are
I mean,
yours.
I had gone to the attorney, and we had a plan of action about how I would confront him, and then his response was, "Wow, you really blindsided me with that. I don't understand why you, told me this in a letter." I always thought we had a more open and honest relationship, and I just sat there kind of dumbfounded. I thought, we had such an open and honest relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
Then why didn't you tell me you were gay, and why have you been cheating on me for the last 4 or 5 years? You know.
Exactly.
I mean, they, you know, they'll come up with some of the craziest lies and excuses and reasons for, you know, they'll try to rationalize anything away.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And that's why one of the things that, you know, we spoke about last week, you know, when I had Grace on as my guest, was that, you know, a lot of these men will never admit the truth. They're always going to make you think that you're crazy. They're always going to tell you that you must be imagining this stuff. How could I possibly be gay? But I always tell women, you got to trust your instincts. Mm-hmm. I mean, women who have straight husbands don't come my way. 90, you know, maybe one out of a million. But if you're getting in touch with me, it's because there's something that's telling you that there's
something
going
on. Something that's making you think.
And I think that in many cases, maybe you can tell me if you agree with this or not, but in being in these marriages, we start doubting ourselves in so many ways in our thinking because things don't make sense. You know, we try so hard to make our husbands happy. Nothing's working. We internalize it and blame ourselves for it. So even if we start thinking along these lines and we feel guilty, how could we be thinking this? You know, it's so conflicting.
Right.
Because
I mean,
it's so
confusing. I can remember even after I had found absolute positive evidence that my husband was gay, I had found his profile on a gay dating website, and there were photographs, naked, nude photographs of him on that website, and I knew it was him. I recognized the room in the house where they were taken. I would still, this was before I had confronted him, we would be sitting in the den watching television like we did every night, and I would be sitting there thinking, did I misunderstand something? You know, am I crazy? You know, am I making a mistake? You know, have I misinterpreted something? So yeah, I mean, you know, it's your mind is you know, your mind is playing tricks with you because it's just, it's something so out of the ordinary and so bizarre and so foreign to you that it takes
mm-hmm.
a while to wrap your mind around it and accept that, yeah, this is the truth.
And there's so many variations, once again, that no two, you know, gay husbands are the same necessarily.
Right.
And none of the, you know, even though the emotional impact is the same for all of us, but, you know, there's so many different degrees of this so that you never quite know what is the truth, what's not the truth, what are they telling you that is true, what isn't. You know, you just don't know, and then you find out so much information later showing you that, you know, they weren't being honest with you, then you doubt yourself, your ability to make decisions. I mean, there's just so many far-reaching complexities that come out of these marriages.
Right, and then you're in this state of doubting and everything, and you're thrown out into the world on your own,
mm-hmm.
and you've got to try to carve a life out for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where a good counselor can come in, a good therapist. And I was very, very blessed to have a good one. You know, she never, you know, when I went in that first time and I told her, I said, you know, I've discovered that my husband is gay and he's been cheating on me for 4 years. You know, she never questioned that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she never questioned that. She accepted that and, you know, and she let me talk and she let me cry and she let me rant and rave and she let me tell her that, you know, I would like to take a taser to him and watch him twitch on the floor and pee all over himself. You know, and she laughed and she said, well, as long as you don't really do it, it's okay to fantasize about it because that's a good way to deal with anger. But she was, you know, she got me through some really dark times. And
that's why I think finding good counseling is really important.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, sometimes people get misled. And I always say, if you're not comfortable in a counseling situation after the first, you know, let's say you give it 3 or 4 times.
Right.
And
it takes
no
a while to see if it's going to click, yeah.
You have to move on, right?
Absolutely. And one of the good friends that I had confided in, her brother is a psychiatrist, and he had given me that little bit of advice. He said, you know, go a couple times, and if you don't feel like there's a connection, then move on because, you know, they're not going to feel that connection either. And, you know, this is, I mean, it's a consumer thing. I mean, if you went to an auto mechanic and you didn't like the way they worked on your car, you wouldn't go back. You know, if you go to a store and you don't like the way they treat you, you don't go back. So if you go to a therapist and you don't feel that there's a connection, then don't go back. You know, ask around. Ask friends who they've used. You know, and, you know, they may not want to, you know, share that information, but, you know, they may tell you who they used. And,
so much time in therapy and go backwards because it's just not the right therapist. You have to have somebody who's on board with your, you know, first of all, your beliefs and your value systems. In other words, you don't want to go to a counselor who's going to tell you, well, you know, homosexuality is a choice and your husband's just making a mistake. And if you're a better wife, then you can, you know, turn out and he'll be a better husband to you. You don't want to find the wrong counseling. And I think it's so easy to find that.
Well, my ex-husband went to a therapist who advertised himself as gay-friendly. And then once he got in there, he found out what the guy was saying was, you know, I can cure you.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it can't be cured. Like I said before, you know, you can't change somebody's eyes from brown to blue.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't cure gay. It's just the way you're born. It's the way your brain is hardwired. So he very quickly got out of that counseling situation. But I found mine through a former pastor, and I told him up front, you know, I said, I don't want somebody who is going to pat me on the knee and say, oh, honey, you know, you don't have to divorce him. We can fix that because, you know, no, we can't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me the name of this woman, and he said, you know, you're not going to get that from her. I've worked with her on a lot of different things, and she's, you know, her thinking is very progressive. You know, she's not going to tell you that you're crazy because you think your husband's gay, and not going to tell you that, you know, you just need to stick it out because you're a better wife, you know, and that'll fix it. And like I said, I was just very blessed that right out of the, you know, the first one, you know, we clicked. And I saw her for probably 2 years.
Well, I know that I feel so fortunate that we hooked up with Dr. Brian Hooper, who's a therapist who's been a guest on, you know, the show a number of times. And a lot of our women find him so calming and so healing. And he is a gay therapist, but he's very open and honest. And, you know, he's never been married, so he can really sympathize, you know, with the women, what
right.
we're going through. And he's been, like I say, great support and comfort to many of us. And he's going to be joining us, you know, in between Christmas and New Year's that week just to give some support to the women, you know, because it is such a difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I'm really excited about, also just to change the subject for a moment, next week we're having a show about different ways that you can now catch your husbands as far as, you know, you can't deal with spyware for the computer or for, you know, the cell phones. There's a whole new line of spyware that's out there that I'm just so impressed with. And, you know, this is something that you're really great with, Maggie, as far as, you know, catching your husband. Because you've certainly done lots of work with that, right?
A lot of it was that I was lucky. You know, I was able to get into his email, and then the email led to other things, and you know, so, you know, but a lot of women aren't able to get into their husband's email or cell phone or
right.
Know,
so for those
like
women
that,
who can't, this, you know, new spyware that I'm, you know, from a company I'm having on next week, I'm just so amazed by their products because they have things that you can buy something that looks as, you know, innocent as a watch or a thermometer. And the recording or a video, DVR, you know, and these little tiny, you know, instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And their audio and their voice activated.
Yeah.
So you can really hear what's going on when you're not around. I think that having proof is so important as far as getting closure in these situations.
Right.
You know, my heart goes out to all our women who have to sit there wondering, you know, will they ever learn the truth? And, you know, some of these men, I say about 60% of them will never tell the truth because they don't want to. You know, they're too
right.
afraid of what they have to lose.
Right. And this, while the truth hurts in the beginning, you know, like you said, it gives you closure. You know, when you know what the truth is, well, what is that saying? You know, the truth shall set you free.
But it's really
you know.
True. I mean, I don't understand why it's so hard for men to have to do the right thing. But many of them will never do it, and they say, well, my wife knows. Well, did you tell her? No, but I know she knows. No, that's not good enough. You know, you owe her that.
Yes,
when
she
somebody's
needs to,
been
and,
there.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, to, and to my ex-husband's credit, he did admit to me that he was gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this was after I found out, you know, that...
Exactly.
You know,
he wasn't up front in it. He just didn't deny it.
And that, you know,
that
he's been running around, yeah.
But a lot of women will never
even get that. And he told our
children,
too.
I'm sorry, he what?
I said, and he told our children, too. Because
mm-hmm.
I told him, I said, I think it's your responsibility to tell them. They deserve
mm-hmm.
to know the truth. They don't need to know the ugly details, but they need to know the truth. And as it turns out, they already knew. They already suspected.
Because as we often say, children know long before we do, right?
Oh, yeah. They are a lot smarter than we give them credit for sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, to wrap it up, you know, one of the ways, as Maggie was saying, that it's really important to get through the holidays is to find support. And when you need support, of course, we have our support chat room where Maggie comes. And, you know, I'm there on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays with some wonderful women. And it's, I think it's just comforting knowing that there are other women who understand everything you feel. And you don't have to say a word. Isn't that true?
Right. Absolutely. You know, you're not going to hear from them, oh, you need to just move on and get over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've walked in your shoes and they know exactly what you're going through.
Exactly.
And one of the things that one of the pieces of paper that my therapist gave me, and she said, you know, I want you to do this, and it was a declaration of intention for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
there are two things on here, two questions to, you know, to address. And the first one was, what do I want for me for this holiday season? And I wrote down what I wanted. And then the second question is, what will I do to make sure that I get it? And again, it all goes back to, I said, the key word is planning, you know. And so, you know, sit down and ask yourself, what do you want for the holidays? And what
mm-hmm.
will you do to make sure that you get it?
And you can't wait till the last minute. You really have to do a little planning,
you know,
as Maggie's
saying. You have to do some planning, yeah. And, you know, and don't expect that it's going to be perfect. You know, again,
mm-hmm.
that's going back to, you know, unreasonable expectations. You know, don't expect that it's all going to be perfect and that you're not going to have any loneliness and you're not going to have any sadness and, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, if you can plan ahead, you can forestall a lot of that and maybe derail a lot of that. And it'll be, you know, better than it would be if you hadn't planned.
That's true. And don't sit home waiting for a miracle. Like your husband's going to come knocking on your door and saying, honey, you were right. You know, that, you know, I've screwed up big, but I can change. You know, don't hope for some miracle that just isn't going to happen. You know, learn to accept what is so that you can move on. And I think the key to all this, and I think you've hit on it tonight in a few different spots, Maggie, is learning to love yourself.
Yes.
And make sure that you know that you're number one and start to believe it, that your feelings, you know, are the feelings that count before anybody else's. If you can't be happy, you know, nobody's going to make you happy. You have to make your own happiness.
That's right. Yeah. And you have to
And you
love
can
yourself.
Find that all over again. I know it takes time, and it doesn't happen maybe your first Christmas or holiday season, but it will happen. And it's happened for, you know, so many of our women. We've seen them move on, have wonderful success in, you know, their lives, meet new people, friends, new romance. You know, you just have to give yourself a chance and believe that this is not the end of the world. It's just the beginning of a different world
right.
where you can redefine yourself and start again and still have a wonderful life, as the message goes. So would you like to have any final words, Maggie?
Well, I would just like to wish everybody a Merry Christmas or a Happy Hanukkah or a joyous Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. It can be good for you. You know, you can have a good holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just have to do a little planning, but I just wish the best for everybody because there is a better life out there. There really is.
I know that you're only a click away from me. You can always write to me at Bonkaye, Bonkaye, aol.com, and I'll be more than happy to respond to you if you want to join our support chat, receive my newsletter, you know, whatever the case is, listen to our back archived episodes of the show. We have enough there to keep you busy for weeks.
Right.
You know, just tune in, right? And you can hear Maggie on other shows. She's been, you know, a wonderful guest and a wonderful co-hostess tonight. So I really want to thank you, Maggie, for joining us.
You're welcome.
And we'll look forward to having you in the new year joining us again.
I look forward to it.
All right. And you have a wonderful holiday season.
Thank
and
you.
And ladies, join in next week, and you can hear from Mega Security all about the different spyware that you can be using in this upcoming year to really change your life around. All right. To all of you, love to all of you, and we'll be back here next week on the Straight Wives Talk Show, and have a wonderful week. And Maggie, love to you.
Thank you. Same to you.
Bye-bye.